In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, one God, Amen. I was given the choice to choose a topic. Yani Rania and I went back and forth about what the topic should be, and then she told me, pick whatever topic you want. I have been busy with this idea since this last hurricane, and I'm gonna explain why in a minute. So this is a verse that was said by St. Paul to his disciple Timothy in his first epistle. And this is the last chapter of this epistle, which is chapter 6. What we're going to do is we're going to understand what does he mean by a great gain, أو تجارة عظيمة. I'm going to go through the topic in English, but all the verses are in Arabic as well on the slides. Once we understand what this concept is, we're going to go to the practical point of how can we achieve what St. Paul was advising his disciple Timothy to do. So we're going to read the verses and then go from there. So he is advising his disciple Timothy saying the following: unless useless wranglings of men of corrupt minds and destitute of the truth, who suppose that godliness is a means of gain. اللي بالعربي يظنون أن التقوى تجارة. التقوى لوحدها تجارة. And probably this was manifested in the age of St. Paul, and we can see it here all around us, what we call in English the prosperity gospel. That being healthy or being wealthy automatically implies that God is satisfied with what you are doing. God is approving of your lifestyle and what you are doing. But he is saying here that some people think that godliness is a means of gain, right? But he is advising him and saying, now godliness with contentment is a great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and it is certain that we can carry nothing out. And having food and clothing, with these we shall be content, but those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. Very strong passage. Yani, I don't know how can people understand this in a different way. He is very straightforward. He's using very strong language here to make this idea very clear. Imagine that this is the conclusion of the epistle. Yet he sent another epistle later, but at the time of writing this epistle, he didn't know that he's going to write a second epistle. So at the conclusion of any epistle, you have to understand that this is what he really wants St. Timothy to focus on. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. But you, O man of God, flee these things and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, and gentleness. And this is what we're going to focus on. Of course, we're going to focus on this concept of godliness with contentment is a great gain. One fact that this passage is showing is that among all the business that we are busy with, and we might rightfully be busy with other stuff because we have to pursue our life, because we live in a world here, there has to be some sort of business in our life that we should be busy with, right? There has to be some certain occupation here or preoccupation here in mind that should be present. Otherwise, we are missing out the whole point, right? And this is the godliness with contentment. Now, what is godliness? اللي هي بالعربي التقوى. And that's a question, actually, I'm looking for answers. What is godliness? Follow God's commandment. That's one of the three that I have on the slides, I think. Yeah, follow God's commandment. What else? It's the fear of God. And the fear of God, again, is a big expression that sometimes we don't understand what it means, the fear of God. The fear of God simply means that God is part of my decision-making exercise. That whenever I make a decision, whenever I'm in conflict, I am seeking what God would think about this decision. What would he approve or disapprove? Is he on my mind, or I am operating in a separate silo? And then later on, I will know that I missed out, etc. Is God part of this discussion? Is God part of this decision or no? So are we considering, is he on our mind or no? It's a mix of loving God and loving people. And this connects what Mariam was just saying. God himself defined that his love is to follow his commandment. He said, whoever loves me should obey my command. So godliness means loving God and loving those who are around God or God's children. The third one is obeying the commandment. So these are three definitions of what godliness means. St. Paul also said in the same epistle three chapters earlier, and without controversy, great is the mystery of godliness. God was manifested in the flesh, justified in the spirit, seen by angels, preached among Gentiles, believed on in the world, received up in glory. And I'm going to focus on a couple of meanings here. That our godliness as Christians is different from any other godliness in any other religion. This is perfectly explained in the Epistle to the Romans. In the Epistle to the Romans, the level of godliness that God is looking for is not only controlled by my conscience, but by the weak consciences around me. And he said this in Corinthians as well. He said, maybe I'm considering that something is right and godly, but because I love God and the other side of this coin, that I love the people, maybe what I consider right, one of my weak brethren is considering wrong, and I will not do it, not to put him or not to offend him. So the level of godliness that's required in Christianity is actually much higher, right? The other meaning that I want to focus on here, that with this, godliness is not complete unless it is preached to others. And preached to others doesn't mean someone staying in front of me and preaching like what I'm doing right now. But how am I communicating this godliness to others? And this is the complete picture in Christianity. So it's a very high level, and it also had to be preached somehow to the others. St. Paul also talked about a fake godliness. Fake godliness. Yani when you, this is yani something keep in mind when you're reading the writings of St. Paul. Whenever he talked about love, for example, specifically, he always follows it by love without hypocrisy. Because there is love with hypocrisy. So there are some verses that will give you the illusion that you are doing the right thing, but still you are being misled. So what's he saying here? But now this, that in the last days, perilous times will come, for men will be lovers of themselves. Think about this and compare it to what we are seeing around us here. Around us, and probably in this room as well, in this church, in this diocese, whatever. It's all over the place. Lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedience to parents, thankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of God. Very strong. Very bad stuff here. Unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong. Headstrong, that's a key one. Headstrong, stubborn. Headstrong, اللي هو stiff-necked, ما كان بيقول على الإسرائيلايتس في الأولد تستمنت. Haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness, but denying its power from such people turn away. I would say that these people are very, very talented. Because while having all these inside, they are having the form of godliness. That there is always an image that I'm a godly person. And that's why the lesson here is, please abstain from judging, because you don't know what this person is about, whether he is good or bad, whether his appearance matches what's inside or no. You have no idea what's inside. Contentment then is what qualifies a godliness to be a true godliness, because that's why he said godliness with contentment is a great gain. And that's why true godliness is from inside out. It starts from contentment, and it's spilled out to godliness of a person. Now, how do I gain contentment? And we're going to take it probably verse by verse of the passage that we just read. How can I gain contentment? And this is going to be the title throughout the rest of the slides. First one is stable concepts. القناعه أو الرضا has to be based on stable and solid concepts. The first concept that St. Paul said here was that for we brought nothing into the world and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And when I heard Abuna Dawood Lam'i years ago explaining this verse, I think he said that St. Paul was in a sarcastic mode. And he was trying to tell St. Timothy, do you have any doubt that you're going to get out of here naked as you entered or no? Basic concepts mean probably I know this, but at some point I forget it. I dismiss it. I deny it. Right? But what St. Paul is trying to say here, that let this be clear in front of you all the time, that you entered without anything and you're going to get out without anything. Do you have any doubt in your mind about this? Or no? So this is a basic concept, or basic concept number one. Think about this when you are trying to show off anything you have. When you are trying to show anything you have. Sometimes we show off and we get creative at it, that we show off, but we want to check out the guilt feeling, so I don't want to look as I'm showing off. Before you have this mindset, think about that at some day you are going to be separated from what you are showing off. Right? Think about this before you show off anything you have. Think about this when you are jealous of someone else. This concept helps when you are jealous of someone else. So sometimes you want to have, and sometimes you want to have because someone else has, or sometimes you just don't want this person to have. This having business, this position business, is for a time. And then, we like it or not, we're going to be detached from wherever we are desiring. So this is number one. Concept number two is detaching ourselves from stuff, right? And this is why I have been busy with this idea for the last month. And this is a personal struggle. During Harvey, there was a shelter that opened in our neighborhood, right? So a decision was made that we are going to try to contribute. Then you go to the pantry or you go to the closet and start selecting the stuff that obviously useless to you, that you're not going to use ever, right? Then you turn to the stuff that you like, and this is when we start asking questions. I'm going to use it, but there are some people there without anything. This is my favorite food. Yeah, but probably the right decision is to give it away now, and then I will buy it later. I have enough here. But we all struggle with our stuff. That I have to keep the stuff that I like. Remember that the gift to God was given the caliber of giving something to your boss at work. Yani God was humble enough and said, if you dare to give something to your boss, give it to me. All right? There is no problem with giving stuff that I'm not using. But if there is someone in need and there is stuff, I have a lot of things that really can get me covered for a while. Why not? Right? But sometimes we get attached to our stuff. Abraham, when he left the land of Lot, when he left the land for Lot to choose first, it's like, okay, whatever. It doesn't matter. Although the promise was for Abraham, not Lot. Right? Moses, when he left his post to serve, he was the second in line. And Saint Paul put it in a very nice way in Hebrews 11. He said that he considered the shame of Christ wealth that's much more or much beyond the wealth of Pharaoh or the treasures of Pharaoh. Yani the way the contrast, everything actually is contrasting in this sentence. Shame versus glory or wealth. And then you are talking about Christ versus Pharaoh. But he considered the shame much more valuable than Christ. The other thing that I want to point out here is that do you look at your stuff as means or identity? Right? Is it your identity or this is means, something that you are using and you're gonna leave? Or is it your means? I don't think that someone who wants to go to own a golden car, for example, thinks of this as means. This is not means. This is an identity. His identity is the car. His identity is the house. His identity is like hundreds of pairs of shoes, tons of skirts and blouses. This is the identity. This is who I am. That's why I'm paying a lot of attention to it. Number two is a basic concept that the love of money is the source of all evil. And Christ couldn't be clear about this. He said, you cannot serve two masters, God or mammon, because if you serve one, you're going to despise the other. So he says, but those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare and into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition, for the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. If you think about most of the problems that we are having, whether the church or outside the church, most likely it's going to be around positions and what I have and money, etc. And St. Paul here is stating a fact, probably for the 10th time in the Bible, that this is a problem. This is a problem. Do you know couples in the church who lost each other, not any couples, a husband and a wife, and also friends who lost each other over money, over business? Right? I know some people like this, right? And they don't wanna reconcile, right? Because money entered into the picture. So another concept is the love of money is the source of all evil. What also helps me to gain the contentment is the sense of sufficiency. Sense of sufficiency. In Corinthians, he said, and God is able to make all grace abound toward you, that you always having all sufficiency in all things may have an abundance for every good work. And we stole this exact expression, كده حطنا فين? In the liturgy. The same exact verse is put in the liturgy, in the litanies, right? That when we have sufficiency in everything, we'll be abound in every good deed, right? So here, God is saying, obviously, in this closet, God gave them a lot more than, this is more than sufficient, I assume. If this is not insufficient, that's a problem. There is really a problem. But God here is trying to shift our focus from being busy of acquiring more to having this sense of sufficiency so we can do something else. He wants us to move on. He was like, okay, enough, moving on. You have enough. Do something else. You cannot be just self-centered all your life. And that's why he said he is able to give you whatever is sufficient for you, so you might abound in every good deed. So this sense of sufficiency. And by the way, the sense of sufficiency does not depend on what you have. It's a decision. It doesn't depend on what you have. There are rich who complain. There are rich who are content. There are poor who complain. There are poor who are content. It's a decision that you make. Like love, for example. Love is not chemistry. Love is a decision that you make, right? So this is a decision as well. What also helps me to gain contentment is something, is having a greater desire. That I desire something else, that my focus is something else. I'll give you a physical example. Imagine that I'm talking to Nader, and all of a sudden, just for as an example, Pope Tawadros showed up from this room, he entered from this door. My focus is not gonna be Nader anymore, right? Malish. Had yakhud al-izaza min eedo asham madra. My focus is not going to be Nader anymore, right? He's going to be whoever is more important than him, right? My focus shifted because there is someone, Nader, Victor, أيحد, there is someone greater who entered the picture. So all of a sudden, everyone is going to be looking back because this is the focus of it, right? So having this greater desire, this focus is going to help me with the contentment idea. It will also, we were talking about sufficiency, it will make, whether I have or no, let's assume that I don't have, but I have this sense of sufficient, it will reduce the pain. It reduce the pain. Maybe there is no pain at all, or there is going to be some pain. I don't have like others do. But if I'm focused somewhere completely different, this difference is not going to make an impact on me. Because I know that in the big spectrum of things, all of these differences are not going to matter. So this, what might be painful for some, is not going to be painful for me. Because again, in the overall spectrum of things, it doesn't really matter. It's in the wash. Or at least minimizes the pain. Look at the monks. Saint Paul, for example. Saint Paul, when he gave up everything, his philosophy, his post, his money, his honor, everything that he had and he gave up, he said, I consider it rubbish. All of this is in the wash. It's rubbish. To the extent, yani, in the Epistle to the Corinthians, yani, I can't believe that this happened. Yani. The Greeks in Corinth charged Saint Paul as a simple-minded person. He said that this guy is illiterate. Why is this guy talking to us? I mean, we are we are a lot more educated than this. Why are they getting this guy to talk to us? This is simple that to us, we don't understand half of what he says, right? But at some point, he just gave up all this philosophy and he said in Galatians that I'm not coming to you with fancy talk. And this is when he said that he is only going to boast about the cross of Christ. All of this philosophy is rubbish. His post, his money, his honor, everything he gave without pain. He considered it rubbish joyfully. He was fine. An example that I heard as well is that not only money, but the contentment of being at some point mistreated. And sometimes what agitates me is not the lack of something, or not the lack of money, but the lack of respect, for example. Or when I am being criticized, that causes pain and caused me to be agitated. It caused me to be uncontent of the situation. And this is when I start getting worked up and warmed up, and I start snapping at people and start reacting, and we hear where these stories go. Something else that will help me with contentment is to ask myself, what do I really want? What do I really want? And Saint Paul put it geniusly in this verse. But those who desire to be rich, he did not criticize the rich. He did not criticize the rich. He desired the people who desire to be rich, that their heart is there. Right? To be rich, fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men into destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. So it is the desire. So what's your desire? Right? Examples. Our father Abraham, rich or poor? Very rich. Actually, the Bible states that he was the richest on earth at some point. He was the one who possessed the most on earth. Go to Hebrews 11. What was his lifestyle? In a tent. He did not own a house because he was waiting for the everlasting city. I'm not asking you to leave your houses. I'm talking about the heart. Where is the heart? Right? Our father Abraham, he was rich. Does anyone have any idea who this person is? Imam Ibrahim al-Gohari. Rich or poor? For those who were born here, this is one of the prime ministers in the Islamic era when Egypt was ruled by the Turks. He was a Christian prime minister or a minister at this point. And he was a very rich person, and he built a lot of churches. He was rich, and he stayed rich. But his heart was not in his money. His heart was to use the money to serve God. King David, Solomon, the king, all of these were rich people. Right? But their desire is not there. What helps me gain contentment as well is escaping from greed. Greed al-hottama.
There is something that is confusing me. Is contentment our rida? عكس الطموح.
Ambition, yeah.
divide is ambition versus contentment. I'm going to summarize in a minute. Yeah. Escaping from greed. Yeah. Pope Shenouda puts it in a very nice way. He says the following. Everyone is fooled by this. And whenever you talk to priests or about priesthood or whatever, they will say that there are three fights that comes to a priest or anyone in the clergy. The lust of the flesh, wrong teachings or heresies, and then money. If you have any doubt that all of us are fought by the love of money, remember always that it defeated an apostle. And this apostle was not served in Victor's class. He was served in Christ's class. Christ had a class of 12 people. One of them was defeated by the love of money. Right? You have any doubt? Let's ask ourselves some questions. How about you hearing that you lost everything, like Job, for example, Job the righteous? Are you going to be sad? Of course, yeah. I'm not saying that you shouldn't be sad. I'm just saying, since we are going to feel sad, that means that there's some sense of attachment. We cannot deny it, right? It just overcoming, the love of money overcoming us is when it becomes a problem. How about hearing the opposite? That you inherited an uncle or something, that you inherited a lot of money. Will this give you a sort of happiness? Okay. Ask yourself the next question. What are your plans to use this money that you inherited? I think this is the real question. Yeah, maybe I'm happy because I have more, because I will be able to give more. That the tithe is now my minimum and I have to exceed this. Right? So what is my desire? Where is my heart? In Proverbs, Solomon says a very nice verse. Two things I request from you, deprive me not before I die. Remove falsehood and lies far from me. Give me neither poverty nor riches. لا تعطيني فقرا ولا غنى. Yani he didn't ask for either. And then the reasoning. And I think we can all relate to this reasoning. Feed me with the food allotted to me, lest I fool and deny you. Talk about rich countries. What is the problem with rich countries now? They are exiling God. Exiling him. I don't need him. I'm on my own. I can do whatever I want. I'm entitled to all I have. And these two arms are what put me here. And what created this wealth and this health. Lest I be full and deny you and say, what is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of my God. Very, very nice verse. لا تعطيني فقرا ولا غنى. Do not make me rich or poor. Again, we're talking about this concept of sufficiency. Thinking about the end of this chapter and what's coming next, this also helps me with contentment. Ask yourself, when you depart, are you going to detach or no? Of course you're going to detach, whether you like it or no. What relates this to Harvey is just an example. Imagine that you have, Harris County decided that if Harvey would hit Houston, your neighborhood and your house is going to be one of the first ones to be flooded. Right? So you kind of know, as a matter of fact, that your house is going to be flooded during Harvey, right? If you decide to detach from your house and sell it before, you will get its value. But if you wait until it's flooded and you're sitting in it, you're not going to get anything. This is the concept here. That at some point we're going to detach. It's your decision now to take the credit of detachment from here or wait until your house will be flooded. It is going to be flooded. Does anyone have any doubt that our houses are going to be flooded? This house? It's going to be flooded at some point. It's now your decision to take credit or no. One more is believing in God's care. Sometimes what helps us to gain the sense of contentment or prohibit us from gaining contentment is we forget God's care. And this is why you'll find some generous people and some people are stingy. Stingy هو بخيل يعني. Verse. But this I say, he who sows sparingly, sparingly هي بتفضل يعني, will also أنا آسف, sparingly اللي هي بالتقدير اللي هي بال بالشح will also reap sparingly, and he who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Sparingly actually is a very accurate expression. Sparingly جاي من إيه؟ من spare يعني إيه؟ The stuff that I don't need. This is the spare stuff, the stuff that I'm keeping, and I may not need, I may not use at all, but still I'm keeping, and that's what I give. So let each one give as he supposes in his heart, not grudgingly or out of necessity, for God loves a cheerful giver. I think the concept is clear here. Also believing in God's blessing, so his care and his blessing. Whatever we leave is just like the five loaves and the two fish. How about the five loaves and the two fish in God's hand? And this concept I want you to understand. I hope I can explain it. This young man or this kid, he might have thought that these apostles asking for this food are crazy. These are 5,000 men with their families, and there is obviously a famine here. We're in the middle of nowhere, a deserted place, as the Bible is saying, and he's asking me for five loaves and two fish. This is how Satan fights me sometimes, is that what you have is so little, it's not going to make any difference, right? But in God's hand, it will make a difference. This is on one hand. On the other hand, I cannot forget that what I gave, is not what feeded the multitude or what fed the multitude. It's still five loaves and two fish. Is this concept clear? In God's hand, he can feed the multitudes, but he is the one who fed the multitudes, not me. But my contribution made a difference, a little difference. And I should go ahead and do it, whatever you have, right? So believing in God's blessings as well. There are three accompanying verses to contentment. This is how you test yourself whether you are improving with contentment or no. The first one is thanksgiving. The first one is thanksgiving. And thanksgiving is a training. This is something that you have to train yourself whenever something that you appreciate God did happens, you should pause. And you should offer the thanksgiving prayer right away. It's a training. It takes a training to do this. The second one is giving. Doesn't have anything to do with what you have. Again, the concept that we talked about, God's, the five loaves and the two fish. It doesn't matter how much you have. It's just, do you have a giving heart or no? And the giving heart can be money. It can be effort and time as well. There are some people that are keeping themselves and keeping their efforts, I don't know until when. And there are some people who take the initiative to help out. Right? So when you are content, you give as well. And the last one is the fear of God. Then Nader was asking about, and he left, about ambition versus greed, ambition versus lack of contentment. Ambition is justified. In fact, you have to be spiritually ambitious, for example. You have to be career ambitious. That's fine. There is nothing wrong of being an ambitious doctor, engineer, or whatever it is. There is nothing wrong with excelling. This is how God wants us to excel in everything we do. Otherwise, we're going to be stagnant. Right? So ambition is fine. It's just ambition is characterized by the following, versus greed, which is gluttony, which is a problem. It's peace. An ambitious person is a peaceful person. I'm excelling in my career, that's fine. I'm excelling in my service, that's fine. I am now giving more, right? That's fine. All of these are justified ambitions. That's okay. No spiritual compromise. So if you have greed or gluttony, no, you're going to start making compromise simply because the priorities are shifted over. They are flipped over. يعني, for some extra bucks, especially if you are not needing, you may skip Sundays. Or you may skip Titus, right? Because priorities are wrong. An ambitious, a rightfully ambitious person has noble goals, right goals. No stepping on other's toes, for example. يعني I'm not gonna step on other's toes to achieve my ambition and call it an ambition. No, that's not an ambition. This is evil. And again, I think I said it once to a group here. When God told Joshua, when they got defeated by Ai, right? And they conquered Ariha al-Hayb al-Inglisi, Jericho. He conquered Jericho and then he went to Ai and he got defeated. And I was like, okay, I'm not getting it. The math here doesn't apply. I mean, what am I missing here? And he said, no, there is something wrong in your tent. There is something wrong in camp. You have to look at what's going on. And then when he said that there was something wrong, someone stole something from the previous battle. Think of it also when you think about stepping on anyone's toes at work. It's the same verse applies to you, that there's something wrong. This is probably a more crafty way of stealing, but it is stealing if you step on someone's toes to go up. Selflessness. An ambitious person is not selfish. Again, this is someone independently trying to excel. That's fine. Right? Humility, and therefore, no complaining. يعني, there is a typo here. No complaining. يعني, a greedy person or a person who has this greed will always complain because there is not enough. عارفين الآية اللي هي in the book of Ecclesiastes that all rivers run to the sea and the sea is not full. Right? The sea doesn't get full. All the rivers are running. God is giving you all of this, but still the sea is not full. And thus, the sea complains. Because that's not enough. Right? Moderation. يعني, this ambition doesn't overcome him. يعني, there are some people, a lot of people, يعني, at least I know two at work, that they got a divorce because they are workaholic. They just cannot stop themselves from working. And whoever suffers is fine. I just have to achieve my goal and excel in my career, no matter what the price is. I'm just... عارفين اللي هي سعب بنقولها اللي هي... He's like the horse. You know the horse, in order to make him focus, what do? They put a couple of covers on his eyes like this. So he's just focused on what he's doing. For a horse, this will work. For a human, that's a problem. It's like if I'm just focusing on one thing and dismissing the others. And then correct priorities. Examples of right ambitions, exceeding in Titus, visiting the sick, improving my service, meekness, etc. All of these, we are asked to be ambitious in every good deed. That's why he said, abound in every good deed. نزداد في كل عمل صالح. And العمل الصالح ده مش العمل الروحي بس. يعني it's not just spiritual work. It's also your job and your career, etc. All of these are good works. Right? God needs monks. He needs the clergy. He needs deacons. And he needs doctors and engineers and lawyers. All of these are needed professions. Do we disagree on this? All of these are needed. يعني all of these are valid targets and valid goals. So today we discussed, I think this is my last slide. So today we discussed the idea of this great gain and some ways through which we can excel in this idea of contentment. I will link it to where I started, is that this idea after what happened in Harvey, that was my first hurricane, and my first hurricane with my family, actually. At some point, you have to realize, okay, everything can go in a minute. Just we're waiting here, and all of this, all what we have worked for, etc., can just... And Abuna Matthias texted me during the hurricane and said, Yani, I never felt that fragile in my life. Yani, we are all fragile, right? So by the end of the day, all of this, again, is in the wash. We just have to focus on what's coming. Glory be to God forever.